from the Ram Deya. All assumptions are more or less wrong.
Yes.
That you have already read a couple of little pieces from the Sutta Nipata of the Pali Canon. Now, before I come to the essence of the lesson, let me tell you a few words absolutely necessary about the forms, in a purely literary way, forms in which these Buddhist texts are given to us and are given to you. First form, you have already learned. Yes, the Four Noble Truths. Yes, it is a form of a sermon. It was Buddha with his own words, Buddha Vachana, yes, who made that sermon to his first five pupils, all of them ascetics. And all of them he had known from his previous ascetic experience in the so-called forest of ascetics. Now, it is the first form, let us call it for convenience sake, sermon, yes. Buddha said that to his pupils, usually not to one, but to several. It is the second form, the first form. The second form is the most vulgarized term nowadays, dialogue. Dialogue. You know, look, what we conceive of the dialogue. Yes, oh, look at the newspapers, the television, yes, and other precious sources of our knowledge and ignorance. Yes, mainly sources of our ignorance, I must say. Yes, dialogue between East and West, rubbish, you know, because there is no such a person as East and no such a person as West. Yes, you understand that? So it is, in the best case, a metaphor. But, of course, it is absolute rubbish. There can be no such dialogue. Dialogue between the developed countries and undeveloped or underdeveloped, between the first world and what is dumb, I forgot, second, yes, third, yes. Doesn't matter, all rubbish. Real dialogue can be only between what? Between two, not people, my life, persons, each of them possessing of his or her own knowledge. All other dialogues mean nothing. Or shall we say, dialogue, a real dialogue is a dialogue between between one knowledge and another, one personal knowledge and another. Or a dialogue is absolutely senseless. What the hell I'm going to talk to you if you cannot communicate me any knowledge and I cannot communicate you any knowledge? You got it? In my opinion, it's very easy to understand. Yes. Now, for comparison's sake, absolutely necessary. Who was the greatest master of dialogue in the European sense? According to Plato, at the very least, who was? Socrates. Socrates. So, and what is very, very interesting, because in Socratic dialogue, well, we may say that one of the main points in that Socratic dialogue was that somebody else says something, and Socrates retorts what? My friend. Sorry?
For the question.
My friend, to the answer, first of all, well, what do we think about that? And usually the other person thinks in Socratic dialogue what? Wrongly, incorrectly. Yes. Because Socrates was endowed with what, sir? Supernatural wisdom. In a sort of ways, because, look, if one of the participants in the dialogue knows all and the other knows something, it is the same as if the other knows what? Nothing. You know, because something in comparison to all is practically nothing. That is why, and what is so interesting, that so many most famous and most well-known Socratic sentences were never figuring in the real Socratic dialogues. For instance, two most widely known Socratic sayings are what? Sir, my all hope is in you. Yes.
Yeah. No, no, sir.
Exactly. Know the self. And the second, I know that I do not know anything. Yes. But let me note, by the way, that know or cognize the self was not said in a dialogue. It was said when? It was said by the oracle. My dear friends, in ancient Greece you could not have a dialogue with the oracle. No. You ask the oracle and oracle answers. And that's end of it. Yes. That's end of it. Because oracle is absolutely supernatural. Yes. But at the same time, Socrates, according to Plato, has its own, as it were, non-human but supernatural basis. It was what? Not once Socrates refers to his, as it were, inner spirit, Evdemon, who speaks to him. But, ladies and gentlemen, you cannot have a dialogue with spirit. Or, shall we say, you cannot have a dialogue with what? Your own
self
or soul. But in ancient, that is what is very interesting. Such a almost a literary genre as a dialogue with your own soul was very widely spread. Where? It is a famous ancient Babylonian text. The dialogue of a man with his soul. It is ancient Egyptian text. But such text in India was impossible. Because the soul what does not what? Now you know. I told you about that. Soul does not speak. It is a man speaks, because the soul does not speak, at least in ancient Indian mythology. And when it, the soul is always it. It cannot be either male or female in ancient India, but it may assume any visible form, female, male, divine, etc., etc., etc. Enough about dialogue. You know everything about dialogue now, I assume. Yes, let it be a wrong assumption. Okay. And now we are coming to the first way of speaking, or shall we may say genre of speaking, is a sermon in Buddhist texts. The second, dialogue. And the third, it's very interesting, a gatha. G-A-T-H-A, gatha. Gatha is a very interesting and specifically Indian form. Usually gatha is in verses. It is a short poetic text. Text in which one Buddha or one of his interlocutors or any other pupil of his expresses his or her inner state. Gatha, yes. Remember it, please. So let us return to the dialogue. A dialogue in Buddhism is usually figures together with a very short narration, which starts with the words, once upon a time, yes? So let me give you some examples. Because all Buddhist dialogues, they are marked by the appearance of the Buddha. And then somebody before him, Buddha, appears, not even knowing who appears before him, says something, or rather says what he or or she wants to. And then Buddha retorts. But narration is necessary, usually very short. Again, once upon a time. So let me give you two very small and, in my opinion, utterly amusing dialogues. By the way, the text you have already read from the Sutta Nipata, they are typical dialogues. But now I'll give even a shorter dialogue. When at last, after very many wanderings and journeys and travels, the Buddha returned to his native town of Kapilavastu, and he sees, yes, his father, his mother, his uncles, his great uncles, his nephews, and a lot of his cousins. Don't forget that Buddha's family was a princely and military princely family. It was a family of warriors, of kshatriyas. That is how Buddha very often identifies his pedigree. That Gautama, as I told you, his ascetic name, from the clan or family of Kshatriyan clan or family of Shakyas, yes. Okay, so, and then Buddha sees everyone whom he had known in his childhood and his youth, because he had not visited his native town, at headquarters of that very powerful military clan of Shakyas, for at least 40 years. So, and one of the first who presented himself before the eyes of the Buddha was a young prince, Nanda, nicknamed Nanda the Beautiful, because he was considered the most beautiful man in the whole area, yes? Such a burden, my gentleman, yes, to be considered the most beautiful. So all girls, all women were after him. And the main feature of his beauty was his curly hair, the most beautiful hair in that region, or in used to boast, in the whole Ganges Valley. So Ananda said, Oh my beloved cousin, he said to the Buddha, instead of saying what? Oh, completely awakened and enlightened one. But poor Prince Ananda was so busy with girls and with his beauty. And Buddha said, oh Ananda, I am overwhelmed. I am overwhelmed by your beauty. How beautiful you are. But first of all, how beautiful is your curly hair. It is the most beautiful hair among the men and gods and semi-gods. And then Buddha turned his head and said, oh, just a moment, Ananda. My friend, said the Buddha to somebody whom nobody saw. Oh, give me scissors, quick! And suddenly, in a supernatural way, scissors happened to be in the hands of the Buddha. Ananda's hair was cut off and disappeared. And then Buddha said, of course it was not Buddha, the Buddha who did it, but suddenly appearing divine barber, the barber, hairdresser of gods. And Buddha said, oh Ananda, the moment came. Now, from this very moment, so he was absolutely clean shaved, like who? Like an ascetic, like a renouncer. Now, from now on, you are the most beautiful ascetic in the three worlds. And Ananda immediately, Ananda was another cousin of his great friend and secretary. Yes, this prince was Nanda the Beautiful, or Sundarananda in Sanskrit. Yes, Sundarananda in Pali. Yes, so from that very moment, Prince Nanda became one of his best pupils, very well versed in Dharma, in Buddhist philosophy. Can you imagine such a type? Oh no. It is very logical from the point of view of Buddhist philosophy, because the best background for impending wisdom is what? Now look, in Christianity the best background is what? Once misery, one is unhappy, one is ugly, nobody loves him. And then he starts loving God, and God starts loving him. In Buddhism it is the other way around. It is if you are happy, if everything is okay, you know, it is the best background for understanding, however paradoxical it may sound, for understanding universal suffering. Isn't it paradoxical? But not in the Buddhist philosophy. Because a normal man, oh, I am suffering. Usually he complains, yes. I am suffering, yes. I am very poor, yes. I am deprived, yes. So I want to be at least a little better off, yes. For such a man, it would be very difficult even to start studying Dharma. But when a man is wealthy, healthy, beautiful, prosperous, for such a man, do you understand it? It's much easier, yes, to what? To get rid of all of his wealth, of all of his prosperity and happiness, and to start, well, what? Treading on the path to the final deliverance of Nirvana. Now I am explaining you the Buddhist conception. Now, let me give you one other example of the dialogue. This dialogue was very short, yes?
Can I wait just one more minute explaining how it is easier about the Buddhist conception to...
Oh, of course.
From our perspective, it doesn't make much sense.
You know, it is because your perspective is Christian or Judeo-Christian. Because from the Buddhist point of view, to give up, you can give up only if you have something to give up. You can relinquish only that which is worthy of being relinquished. But do you agree with me? And that is why when I talked to one Tibetan teacher who wanted to know a bit more about Christianity and was deeply disappointed. He was living in London, that all people around him, yes, not only students, but professors too, know very little of their own Christianity. But it's a normal thing, because in normal people, they know very little about anything. Yes, it is our normal state. That is state in Buddhism, the name avidya, avidya in Pali, avidya in Sanskrit, ignorance. Ignorance is universal. now. So we are coming to the last dialogue. I love it so much. Once upon a time, and I love very much the beginning. Once upon a time, yes. Once upon a time, Buddha traveled in the land of Lichavis. Lichavis was a barbaric tribe of bandits, warriors. You know perfectly well that in the ancient world, as in the present, warrior means what? Bandit in the first place. Yes. I hope you have no illusions about that. Yes. Looter. Yes. Bandit. Robber. So it was a great princely clan of ferocious warriors, very wealthy, yes, because they robbed a lot of villages and towns, yes, very prosperous. And of course, when they are tired, those Lichavis, such was their name. By the way, Lichavi dynasty continued in Nepal till, well, probably it was more mythological than historical, continued till the end of the 17th and beginning of the 18th century AD. Okay. But Lichavis have, well, you know, every decent man and every bandit, yes, has his time of what? Of leisure, yes. Sometimes they play golf nowadays, yes, yes, or something like that, or, well, or watch baseball, or soccer, well, but for young Lichavis, for great charioteers, the utmost pleasure, it was very fashionable about that, was to take the most beautiful girl in the city and go swimming with her to the nearest very beautiful lake. And there was such a girl in that near the headquarters of Lichavis, very beautiful girl, loved by everybody, and particularly by the top of the clan of Lichavis. So everything was okay. Don't forget that in Buddhism, in Buddhist parables, usually it starts with everything was okay, in a bit American way, yes. Yes. So it was the beginning of the evening, and ten tribesmen, ten young, beautiful, strong men on chariots, they took that girl with her to go swimming in that swimming and that a beautiful lake. But that girl was not a simple girl. You start realizing, yes. So the men immediately undressed themselves and were waiting when the girl in her turn will undress, and they started swimming, the man and the girl, who was not a simple girl. You realize that. She took all their what? Clothes, yes, and hid them in a cave. And then they waited and waited and waited and waited. And they saw that there was no the clothes. Where are our clothes? Well, started shouting them. Well, you, and started, of course, calling her names, yes. We are naked, we are deprived of our dignity. Where are our clothes? And they were all naked and angry. You can imagine that. That folk, angry, yes. Naked, without weapons, without clothes, everything was. And suddenly all their chariots with horses disappeared. And even then then at even they lost, you know, their presence of spirit, yes, and were in a state, their anger became despair. And when they were naked and despaired and angry, and she was before them, the Buddha appeared and said, "Oh, it is excellent, it is beautiful, it is beautiful. You are naked, to all of you, before that girl. And now it is the best moment for what? For telling you about the Four Noble Truths. Because you are naked, you are not protected by your clothes, by your weapons, yes? You are naked, as if you were just now born, yes? So, don't get dressed." And then he addressed the girl and said, "And you, my girl, what in fact did you perform?" And the girl said, "Oh, teacher, I am your helper to bring all of them to Nirvana. Because from this state, they cannot return to their headquarters, to their wars, to their plunderings, to their robbing, to their banditry. And we together return to your community of bhikshus, of ascetics." And there is a list of those warriors, which starts, of course, with that girl, who among all people became thirst to be enlightened. It is another dialogue. Isn't it funny, ladies and gentlemen? But the most important here is this dialogue you have already read. You remember it, yes? The first dialogue with herdsman Dania. Dania was a normal farmer, very wealthy, very strong, with the best cattle in the region, yes, with the best grain, the best rice. Everything was splendid. And Buddha said, "Listen, Dania, now it is the season of monsoon. Very, very soon the rain will start. Terrible rain during that period of monsoons in India. And terrible flood. Everything will be annulled. Your household, your cattle." And then, so dialogue starts. And then, Dania was the name of that farmer. Well, he said, "I am not afraid of rain. Look at me." Man, he didn't know that the Buddha was before him. Yes. "Look at me, I am healthy, I am wealthy," or in American language, "I am okay. And everything is okay in my house. A lot of cows, a lot of horses. Look at my house, how was it built? Look at it. Everything is okay. I'm not afraid of any flood, of any rain. Let it fall. I'm not afraid. I have the best health. I have the best order." And then he comes to what? Of course, invariably, as such people do in ancient India and in America, in modern America, yes. He starts boasting about his family life. "You know, my wife is the best wife. She is what? The first quality for such a man. She's obedient to me. She is not quarreling, yes. She doesn't spread her says. She is calm, yes, a very important quality, sir, isn't it? Yes. And so And the Buddha answers, your house is strong, my house. It is the beginning of the interplay of metaphors. Now listen, my house is my what? What?
Body.
My house is secure because my house is absolutely in the control of what? Of my mind. Oh, you said your wife is obedient to you. I say my mind is obedient to me. So it is a sort of a direct metaphorization of one situation and its transformation into another situation. And you says that you have the best cows and the best horses, and I have the best, my horses and my cows are my what? Energies. And at the same time, you are boasting that everything is secure. After I have secured my body with my mind, after I have secured my mind with my highest understanding, after I have secured my knowledge with my knowledge, I told you in Sanskrit, yes, jnana in Pali, jhana, yes, with my super knowledge, highest knowledge of pragya, prajna, yes. So in fact, the Buddha repeated in this dialogue the whole picture, which was which drawn by the farmer Danya, but transformed it into his picture of body, mind, and consciousness. It is a very typical method in very Buddhist dialogues, but it is not enough to say that. Yes?
Is superknowledge enlightenment?
Oh, no. Oh, let me tell you my... Sorry, I forgot your name.
Aline.
Alina. Yes, Alina. Excellent question. Excellent question. Very pertinent. No. In fact, there are three states with respect to knowledge. To it, the state, our ordinary state, of complete ignorance. The state of avidya, yes, it is our state. We got used to it. We even enjoy it. The state of normal knowledge, including the highest levels of knowledge in theoretical physics, yes, in philosophy, in linguistics, in sociology. Oh, not simply, I'm terribly sorry, I take back what I said about sociology. There can be no knowledge of sociology, because there can be no real sociology as a real science. No, yes, now. forgive me my radicalism, please, yes. Well, I have been only, because radicalism is also what? Extreme, yes, so I have to control myself. So is no knowledge the first level, no knowledge, ignorance, second level, knowledge, and the third level, super knowledge, or prajna, prajna, yes, prajna in Pali, yes. But it is not, ladies and gentlemen, I did not want to disappoint you, but it is not yet nirvana. And more than that, now, just in advance, yes, in anticipating our future knowledge of Buddhist philosophy, A very modest one, I must warn you beforehand. I must say that even the super knowledge cannot be sort of a guarantee of nirvana. Why? It is very interesting. The day before yesterday, I told you about the idea of path. Because, mind it, all these dialogues, they describe in one way or another the beginning of path. For those who are participants in those dialogues, it's understood, yes? It was only the beginning of their path. But in Buddhism, if that beginning was initiated by the Buddha himself, it is a great advantage. But again, not yet guaranteed. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, such a thing, such one of the most idiotic notions of our civilization as guarantee does not exist in Buddhism. Because what kind of guarantee there can be in the world of suffering? Ridiculous, yes? That is why that word and that notion of guarantee is absent in the early historical Buddhism. But now, let us return again. Nirvana. In this respect, we have not nirvana, but the path. The path to nirvana, patha in Sanskrit, as in English. Almost literally. Patha. We have only patha. And on that patha you can be the first. You can be in the middle. You can be the last. But even if you are the first among the first, it will never guarantee you that you will achieve nirvana. And not that nirvana is inachievable. But now listen to me attentively, yes? You remember our last conversation. But about nirvana, Justin, I mean, about nirvana, you cannot say that after treading on that path for 85 years, after having become a great yogi, yes? After acquiring the super or better hyper knowledge, the prajna, I can achieve nirvana. Now, remember, not can, but what? May, ladies and gentlemen. You know the semantic difference in English between can and may. Because nirvana is exempt from the chain of causality, in Buddhism. So I may say, I can say, now I may achieve nirvana. But you cannot say, now I can achieve nirvana. 3 minutes interval, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, because I'm smoking addicted. Yes.
Можно глоток.